You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
My life be like, ooh, ah, yeah, ooh. My life be like, ooh, ah, yeah, ooh.
Back on the 750, yeah. Presented in partnership, of course, with Blog and the Boys, SB Nation, and like. Vox Media. I am RJ Ochoa, and I am joined by my co-host, as always, Tony Casillas, two-time Super Bowl champion. Tony, happy Victory Polo Monday to you, sir.
Well, happy Victory Polo to you, and I see that you're actually wearing it today. It looks good on you, and hopefully you'll be able to wear that several times this year. But, I mean, what a great win for the Cowboys. 1-1 and leading the NFC division. I mean, I know it's early, but nevertheless, it's nice to be up there. After kind of the overreaction first week of the season, they get back on track.
Yeah, you know, we started the 750 last week, and we were coming off of a loss. So this is our first time coming off a win. The Cowboys winning on Sunday Night Football, 20-13, as you mentioned, over the Giants. Always good to get a division win. And you're right, Dallas Cowboys currently, you know, they're tied. People want to, you know, be technical. They are leading the NFC East. I don't care if it's week two. It's always a good thing when you can sit atop the most storied division in the National Football League.
Well, and certainly, you know, after the first week of the season, everyone wants to have this overreaction and kind of, what are we going to get with this kind of, you know, different look on offense? And especially what happened yesterday, you know, the Redskins lose, then you have the Eagles lose, and you have two teams playing each other in the NFCs. So it's nice to really get, you know, rack up the wins, especially against NFC East opponents.
It's great. I mean, you know, those weeks are rare, but the weeks that the Cowboys are the only ones that win. They're the only ones that can say that all week long. And I've got in my office, I have all 32 mini helmets, and I line them up every week to reflect the division standings. And so I'm pretty pumped this week to be able to put the Cowboys at the front of it. You know, last week they had to be at the back, and it was horrible.
So it's kind of like your little chess match, or it's almost like chess match. You kind of line up the different pawns and,
yeah,
you know, the king and everything. I like that.
Yeah, you know,
just
I kind of
keep moving them up and keeping them in place. It's kind of like my son's fantasy football team. I mean, he's focused on that all game long, and it's crazy. I mean, I don't do it. I used to do it, but I got tired of just being put on autopilot every week, and I just really didn't watch my teams. But I like that. I like the helmets, and that's kind of cool.
You know, it's just something I've done since I was a little kid. Does your son have any Cowboys on his fantasy team?
Yes, he does. I think he didn't have Zeke, so I have to. Yesterday, I don't think he had any of them playing us. I don't think he had Zeke, but you know, we went to the game, and it's like my son and his friend, and my daughter and her friend. It's always great to go to a Cowboys game, especially when you're taking kids and they haven't ever been, because everyone's happier, and everyone's always happy on a Monday, especially in Cowboy Nation. But it's fun, the reaction for every game. I think that's what's great about fantasy football, whether you have players on the Cowboys team or whatever team it is. It just kind of keeps you kind of engulfed on what's going on. And everyone that really doesn't have only really has their vested interest in their team, local team, it's great that it's kind of scattered out and everyone's watching the red zone every week.
Totally agreed. And before we dive into what we saw on Sunday Night Football, you said you were there. I was there, so no green zone for us, thank God. But I think people are curious, because I know I'm curious. How often do you get asked to take a picture when you go to a Cowboys game?
Well, here's what we do, RJ, and that's a great question. We have this great program that we work with, the Cowboys Organization's alumni program, and it's a group of alumni players. Yesterday I was in a suite with Brady James, of course, a great linebacker that played LSU Tigers. But they pick certain guys on game day, and we go and do meet and greets in different suites, and we try to be the ambassador for the Cowboys and the fans and people that are spending a lot of money out there. So in return, we get season tickets, and it's a nice perk. It's nice to be able to go. Probably I usually go to 4 or 5 games, the home games. Mm-hmm. But yesterday, that's my role. My role is to play the Tony Casillas, Super Bowl champion, go back and talk to the fans, tell the stories. And it's great to be remembered. So it's a promotional thing, slash being able to take your family to the games, and it's working and it's a pleasure.
That's
and
awesome.
I always enjoy it. One thing I don't do anymore, people used to ask me to wear my Super Bowl ring, and I quit doing that. I don't take it off. But I get asked quite a bit, especially if you're in that realm of role that day. But it's great. I'm always a fan, and as you do media and then what we're doing and other things I'm involved with, you have to be a little objective. But I find myself doing a lot of cheering for the boys.
That's pretty cool. I think people that's one of the coolest parts about having you on the BTB staff is that level of insight. Obviously, very, very few people in life have experienced that. And it is cool, the fraternity of the Dallas Cowboys. I know they showed Rayfield Wright during the game, the big cat. And so it was really, really cool. It's always cool to see the people that have built the Cowboys brand into what it is, including yourself. So that's great. Hope you enjoyed. It must be hard to pick which Super Bowl ring you want to wear. Now, that's a good problem to have.
Well, the ongoing joke that I and you'll get a big kick out of this, you're a lot younger than I am, is that I was actually doing a promotional signing autographs at an event, and people are in line and they were coming to see me and another player, and the other player that I was with was, I would say, younger and wasn't part of the great 90s, mm-hmm. the decade, the dynasty, if you will, of winning. And I had my Super Bowl rings on. And a kid comes up to me and says, hey, Mr. Casillas. I said, yeah, son, would you like an autographed picture? He goes, yeah, but do you know what you call a Dallas Cowboy? And I was like, oh, what? I was kind of like getting ready for this great answer. I said, what do you call it, son? He goes, old. And it just made me shut up. So I realized, yes, it's been a long time, but I said, son, at least it's on my resume. At least I have
them. Yeah.
So that's kind of the difference between the millennials and the generation of the Cowboy Nation now and my nation. But the thing about it, and I told you, I think, on the first show, it's better to be remembered than forgotten.
Sure.
And I always enjoy that.
Sure.
Always enjoy engaging with the fans.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, it's been a little while, but those rings are rings. You can't take them away, and they're part of the 750, surely. But, all right, let's hope last night's win was the first step to getting a sixth ring for the Dallas Cowboys. 20-13 win over the New York Giants. Initial takeaways, I think I'll start for me. The Cowboys defense is for real. I know you guys, back in your day, at one point were the number one defense in the land. I think this defense could challenge for that. I think this defense, if things go a certain way, I know there are tough ones, obviously, across the NFL, but this is one of the premier defenses this season in the NFL.
Well, there's two statistics that I look at. I look at yards per carry, and you saw right away that you look at the sheet, 3.5 yards per play against an explosive offense. However you want to look at it, the offensive line of the Giants is not good, mm-hmm. but they have a ton of playmakers. Saquon Barkley is going to be a tremendous player. I mean, I've never seen a guy that makes people miss tackles and broke a couple ankles.
Oh,
but the great thing about that, RJ, is that the end result. He had 14 receptions, so they use him a lot. But I'm right to you. I'm going to piggyback on that, the defense. Whenever you're able to spread the sacks around with 6 different players – I thought the defensive back,
Chidobe Awuzie.
He played excellent, going with Byron Jones. There's a lot of game balls on the defensive side of the ball. Taco Charlton showed up. He's a first round draft pick last year. And so it's kind of great. I have a tendency to look at the defensive line because that's where I played. And so I wanted to look at the matchups. But right away I noticed that Tyrone Crawford, he was getting off the ball. He was causing disruption, creating a lot of opportunities for the defense. And DeMarcus Lawrence, he just continues to get better and better each week. So you look at the statistic, and then the most blaring statistic I saw, RJ, was 5 minutes left in the game. The Cowboys have only given up 150 yards and 3 points. I had to look at it. I mean, are you serious? 100? I mean, that's unheard of. Mm-hmm. I don't care who you're playing in the National Football League. A team like, you know, Eli Manning, he's not this most mobile quarterback, right. But he still has a live arm. But to look at that statistics, I'm thinking, those guys are balling today.
It's domination.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
I was in the locker room last night talking to Taco, and when he ran in, Taco, he said, "Hot boys for life." And I think that's really cool. Everybody knows how the defensive line has kind of dubbed themselves the Hot Boys, and that was Taco's idea. And I think there's a lot to that, and you know, you can speak to that, certainly, to kind of believing in something as a group, like whether you're the Hot Boys, whether you're the Purple People Eaters, or whatever the case may be. But I've said before, you know, if you can convince 53 guys that the sky is orange, you know, it may not be, but if the entire locker room believes it, then the sky is orange, you know what I mean? And so I think that there's a brotherhood there. You know, you mentioned Tyrone Crawford. When we were all kind of gathering around Taco, I was kind of in front of Tyrone's locker, and he was just joking around. He was like, "Man, now all y'all want to talk to him. You know, this dude, he's coming in, he's taking all the attention and laughing and stuff." And it's so cool to see them cheering for one another and having success together.
Well, these group of guys, as you mentioned, there's a certain amount of brotherhood, but there's a certain amount of everything that you do that people don't. The glamorous part, there's no glamour playing defensive line. The statistics, the stats, sacks, and everything else, that warrants that. But it's always nice. I think I sense that. Well, I know I sense this with this group of guys. The greatest thing about playing this game is obviously you get paid a lot of money, but the most rewarding thing is winning and being able to have fun. Mm-hmm. And when you're flying around, you're making negative plays, you're creating opportunities, when you're shutting people out, when you're just balling, everyone's happy. And so collectively, that's the thing. It's not just one or two guys, which is great. But when you have six or seven, eight or nine guys making a contribution, that's where the consistency comes in play, because everyone's making a contribution. And that's what you saw last night. Everyone was flying around. Everyone was making plays. Everyone was having fun. You know, I love the Taco Charlton, you know, making tacos. So that's great because it, to me, I sense that these guys have really, really put in a lot of work, and there is a lot of pressure. If you're a first round pick, there's a lot of pressure that goes along with that. There's a lot of expectations. So finally, maybe that's coming to some fruition, because we saw some of those signs last night. He had a sack and recovered fumble and was getting off the rock all game long.
I think it would feel good. You know, Taco is probably the least popular first-round draft pick in a long time. People wanted T.J. Watt last year.
Not with me. I love tacos.
Well, hey, I mean, what's your, you know, while we're at it, you know, because this is an important topic. Your go-to taco, soft or crunchy, and beef or chicken?
That's a great question.
I'm going to go.
I like the crunchy one, but they're too messy, especially if you're eating them in your car.
Right.
So I got to go with the soft taco, and I'm going to go with the carne asada.
That's a good one.
I got to have that.
I got to have the meat. My dad makes killer beef tacos, and he pan fries the tortillas. Oh. So they're great. I'm going to have to go with his beef tacos. But I don't know what kind Taco Charlton was making, But yeah, I mean, you know, while I, you know, you certainly have liked him, a lot of Cowboys fans really did not like him, and it does feel good to see him really kind of clicking and all of that working and everybody having his back. You mentioned the recovered fumble, and Damian Wilson was the one that forced that fumble. And I think what is so cool about the defense, and I keep using words like cool and neat, but that's because that's what it is. I mean, we haven't seen something like this in a long time. Is the Cowboys had defensive success at every level. Obviously, the defensive line was great. I'd say that Jalen Smith was on fire. It's still kind of weird to see Sean Lee missing a bit. He's probably, you know, the star that's the most off. And I say that lightly. I don't think he's bad by any means. But then Kayvon Frazier had a great game. You mentioned Cheeto. You mentioned Byron Jones. Every level of the defense is balling out. And that, I think it just has to give you some level of confidence. Like, we can all go out and we can dominate as an entire unit.
Well, I know Rod Marinelli's defense is made for defensive linemen and defensive players. you know, they play some, they play press coverage, and when they blitz, they dial up a blitz. And again, they took advantage of the situation last night. They took away against a struggling offensive line. Mm-hmm. But as a whole, as a defensive unit, there's a lot of times where you find holes in the offensive line, and for some reason, you set expectations that you're going to have a great day in the NFL. Sometimes it may be one of your worst days. So you don't ever assume anything in a National Football League. But, you know, for me, watching the scheme that they threw at him, you know, Eli Manning, the best pressure you can put on a quarterback is up the middle in the pocket. I mean, he had nowhere to go, and he's not a mobile quarterback. And you mentioned Jalen Smith. I was more impressed with Eli Manning being able to get up after that hit. Man. Every in that stadium, all you could hear is, ooh!
Oh, it was sick.
And Jalen, you got to give it to Jalen Smith because he was hauling ass. But if you watch that, that was a textbook tackle. That wasn't that stupid call they made yesterday.
On Clay Matthews.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's what they want to see, because Ollie hit him with his shoulder, and he had a clean shot at him to take his head off. And the fact that Eli Manning got up after that, I think I was more impressed with that than him being the MVP in the Super Bowl.
You know, so I think what I love most about that play, and you mentioned it was impressive, but was that there was no question that it was completely legal. Because you're right. Like, obviously, the NFL's trending in a direction where, like, you know, you look at the Clay Matthews play in back in your day, you know, that's an amazing quarterback sack or quarterback hit. But now there's all these question marks. There's all this, man, what is it? I don't know, et cetera. How do you play? So it was so cool that it was immediately, obviously, a legal play. You know, Jalen said that he hopes his Madden ratings go up. So
I saw that. I think I saw that on your Twitter handle and or your Twitter feed. And it's a great story, Jalen Smith. I mean, there's a guy that, and he's so grateful. I mean, I saw something he tweeted out today about it's great to be on America's team, to have to give him the opportunity. And I was back there in the Cowboy luncheon when he got the Ed Block of Courage Award. I mean, he's very grateful, and he's a tremendous player. And but more importantly, I think he's just a tremendous man. And so he's very grateful for that. But it seems to me he's getting his feet. He's more sound now. I think his body feels more, is probably getting more to 100%. Because you got to remember, they didn't know if he was going to be able to actually play football again. Right. But just to see some of him flying around and making plays, it just adds to that linebacker core.
I think it was definitely the best game we've seen of Jalen so far in his young career. You mentioned how grateful he is. He walked into the locker room and walked up to Jerry Jones and he thanked him. You mentioned how grateful he was, and he just, because I can't imagine what that's like to have your potential livelihood compromised the way his was, and to wonder and to be scared and to be nervous, etc. As somebody, you know, we mentioned how you are an ambassador for the Dallas Cowboys, which is a huge thing. What's it like to see somebody like Jalen Smith completely and totally just dive in on what this franchise and this organization is? I mean, does it make you more proud than maybe another Cowboy? Not that you play favorites or anything, but, you know, this, here's a guy who comes out and is saying, you know, I'm so proud to be part of America's team, etc., and just embracing everything within this franchise.
Well, I think he says the right things just because he's very genuine and he means it, and he's been humble. And some guys aren't humble like him, where they don't even, you know, when he injured his knee at Notre Dame his senior year, mm-hmm. and the Cowboys took a flyer on him as a second-round pick, and knew knowingly that it's going to take time before he gets back, and didn't even know if he was going to be able to play again. I think he understands that. And as a former player, when I was a current player, it's always great to see guys overcome adversity, especially when it's something that the hill is so high to climb, and to see everything kind of evolve, and, you know, what his contribution can lead to, because he's such a great player, you cheer for a guy like that. And again, all the guys around him cheer for him because they see all the hard work. We don't, you know, people don't see what goes on in the laboratory, in the training room, to get where he is now. I mean, there was probably so much work that he had to put into it, to even have an opportunity to get back on the field and not even realizing what type of level he would play at. Mm-hmm. And now being able to make big plays, and hopefully the sky's the limit for the guy.
Well, you mentioned big plays. Certainly, I think you know, the sexiest play for the defense all night was the big pop on Eli Manning. And that's because there are six sacks to choose from. But I think we agree. The Cowboys defense was fantastic. Maybe not an A-plus effort. I mean, you know, you can get a little nitty-gritty if you want, but an A effort overall. You know, we're grading on a curve.
I'm going to give an A-plus.
All right.
I mean, look at the statistics. I mean, what, 10 points? I mean, they only allowed 10 or 13 points in the game, and probably the last, you know, 3 points were they got the onside kick, and mm-hmm. I'm not going to say that's garbage time, but
it's
at
different.
That point, they just wanted to try to get out of there and win. And any time you hold a team opponent to that, you know, that those the less you know those points, then that's a hell of a winning performance.
You know,
I overall what they did across the board, that's kind of unheard of. I mean, you really have goals going in the week, but to be able to put those numbers up, sometimes it's some things you just kind of dream about.
I want to go back to something you said a minute ago before we shift gears to the offense, and you mentioned how the Cowboys took advantage and exploited the weak offensive mm-hmm. line of the New York Giants. And while that sounds like really obvious, you know, like if you and I were coordinating a team and we were playing the Giants, we would say, well, their offensive line sucks. Let's attack that. It feels like the Cowboys haven't done that in recent memory. It feels like the Cowboys have gone into a game with a very obvious, you know, Achilles heel, so to speak, to try to take advantage of, and they haven't. So as simplistic as it sounds, go after the weak spot. I think it's a huge testament to Rod Marinelli, to Jason Garrett, to Chris Richard, that they saw that and that they hunted it all night long.
Well, the players made a lot of big plays. I think that they had kind of stood the matchups, it kind of set up that way. The table was set. Well, if we do this and we do that, we have an opportunity to create some mismatches. Mm-hmm. And with this offensive line, there's some holes in there. I know their center went out early in the game with a broken ankle. And so that was a spot that obviously wasn't as strong going into the game mm-hmm. In the second quarter because you lose a guy. And so there was a lot of different opportunities for him. And collectively, across the board, I think when you have an offensive line like that, it's easier to run a lot of different blitzes. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to play more vanilla up front, where you're just, you know, you're doing is getting upfield, because that's what Rob Marinelli, it's all about speed. It's mm-hmm. all about getting and causing disruption. So you saw that. But overall, the game plan and my sense in talking to players that they love playing for Rob. I mean, he's a defensive line. Defensive coordinator's defensive line's dream, because that's all. There's nothing more. It's like taking an edge, or you know, taking a gap and not really. It's not reading. It's let's play the pass and the run. Let's rush the passer and play the run on the way to the quarterback, and let's try to let this thing evolve. And players just love those type of defense. It's fun to play in.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe some other coordinators would be like a fine wine, or you know, a mimosa or something, but Rod Marinelli's like, let's just shotgun these beers. Let's just get up field.
Yeah. Let's just create. Yeah, let's do some shots of tequila. Let's do some fireball, and let's just get at
it. That's see, like that's awesome. That's the Hot Boys nickname is so much more awesome. Okay, so the defense is balling. They got the appropriate liquidation.
They got calibrated real quick.
Right. So Dak Prescott throws a 64-yard touchdown pass on his second pass of the game to Tavon Austin. Holy crap. I think the entire world was – it was – that was like Scott Linehan, like, you guys want to see a deep pass? All right. And it worked. And they let Dak throw deep early on, but then they kind of took their foot off the gas, right? I mean, like, overall, okay, if we gave the defense an A-plus grade, I'd give the offense maybe a C-plus. They were great early on, and it was almost as if they kind of got together and said, okay, all that stuff that was working in the first quarter, we're just going to not do that anymore. And then to their credit, they did kind of, you know, put their pants on at the end and get a game-winning touchdown drive, but it's still kind of a weird offensive performance, and one that you can't, I don't feel like, get too confident in just yet.
I felt like going in this game that we, and I think we talked about it briefly, is that first game there's not enough creativity, they're not mixing it up, they're not using Dak, his legs. I think they all listened to us the second
right.
game, because right away I thought, I was talking about this earlier, you know, before the game. I said, I'd like to see him just come out and just throw the ball.
Right.
Because you know, Landon Collins says, okay, well, you know, he's taught, I guess you can interpret as him talking smack, but he's, and I didn't interpret that. He's basically saying, Zeke's going to try to run the ball against us. And if they don't do that, then Dak's going to have to throw the ball. And that's kind of what you dial up to. That's your goals going in the game. But I love the play call. I love the play action pass. And welcome to Dallas, Tavon Austin, because that double move. And that was a great throw by Dak. He put that ball in. And I was sitting in that part of the end zone. I was up about three rows. And I could see it like the play evolve. And as soon as he put that double move, and as soon as they did that play action, that defensive back bit on it, and there was separation, and Dak put it right on him. And a lot of people want to see Tavon Austin be a really big part of this offense to create some space and create some big play opportunities. And I thought the first half, I thought that maybe they got a little, I would say, conservative.
Sure.
Because the defense was so dominating. And they were thinking, well, we don't really need to do anything. I felt like that Dak needs to – we're going to have him manage the game, which I thought he did a tremendous job. Mm-hmm. I thought Dak – in this game, they took advantage of his ability to run the football. I mean, he had, 47 yards rushing. But that play right there, I was like, yeah, this is good. This is going to be good. I'm really looking forward to the rest of the game plan and the rest of the football game.
I don't want to cause speculation. I wrote about this. It should hit Blogging the Boys maybe late Monday, early Tuesday. We heard that Dak had an ankle issue early on. He was on the injury report the week leading up to the Giants game. And, you know, you've been to a lot of Cowboys games, as you mentioned. Dak, every home game, it's like his thing. Coach Garrett runs out, Tyron Smith, Lyle Collins right behind him, and then Dak runs out, and he jumps, right? And he like, raises his knees as high as he can. It's like his signature move. He did not do that last night against the Giants. So I was wondering, well, maybe his ankle's a little sore. He didn't want to jump, you know, maybe 6 feet up in the air. And he had both of his ankles taped, which he did not have in
Cowboys. I noticed that. That was a good observation, but he was fatted up. I noticed that.
So...
maybe he thought he was going to run more that game. I don't know.
Maybe.
That'd be a tendency. Maybe we shouldn't talk about that in the next Seattle pond. They're going to look if he spats his ankles up.
Yeah, there's no tape. He's going to run him. No, nothing. Forget that. strike that from the record. But it was cool, certainly great, to see the Cowboys. That's the way to use Dak, that last touchdown drive, those RPOs. I tweeted during the game, has your son or maybe anyone you've ever known, you ever go to like Whataburger and they get their drink and they go to the sort of drink machine and they just get a little bit of everything? You know, they get a little Coke, a little Diet Coke, a little Dr. Pepper.
Call that suicide.
Right, okay.
Back in my day,
people call that
suicide.
A
little bit of everything.
Right, so it felt like that's what Scott Linehan did with the offense. They were like, he was like, you want to see RPOs? We got RPOs. You want to see play action? We got play action. You want to see tosses to Zeke? We got tosses. It felt like he went on a suicide drink with the Cowboys offense. And lo and behold, though, it worked. And I feel like you're right that he did get conservative. I think they took advantage, or tried to at least, of the defense that was dominating. Maybe not took advantage, but, you know, tried to rest on that, and it worked. But I don't think that you can rely on that every week in and out in the NFL.
Well, I really think that it just depends on what they give you. Mm-hmm. And when your defense is hot like that, and not to say that the Giants didn't have any big play ability, but it just seemed to me as just the Cowboys had their number. Even if that lead that they had, I felt like it was like a 3-touchdown lead. I just got the sense, because the Cowboys are dominating so much on defense, that I just really didn't feel like that the Giants could score. Mm-hmm. Because they had their number, and everything that they tried to do, now they could move the ball. Saquon, I mean, Barkley, he was able to get out in space, and they were able to move the chains. But I thought it was indicative of the game plan for the New York Giants when they went for it on two consecutive times on fourth down and converted. I thought that was a big message that we need to be able to take advantage of the situation here, because maybe their defense, they didn't feel comfortable in defense, but they just felt like that they're all in. Sherman thought that, look, we need to get that yard, and they were able to convert. But on the flip side of that, they weren't able to take it down and score, which is huge for the Cowboys.
I'm looking at the ball possession and drive chart right now. the Giants drives, first drive punt, second drive punt, third drive punt, fourth drive punt, fifth drive punt, sixth drive fumble. It wasn't until their seventh drive that they finally put points on the board. I mean, man alive, that's a lot of punts. I mean, and that's
you know, that equals a fresh defense also. That means your defense is getting off the field. And I know the Giants' defense was gassed. Was that one drive that went 14 plays and the Cowboys scored? I think that was the one that they tied the
that was
know, tied
the go ahead touchdown at, or not go ahead. I mean, they had the lead, but the
right.
the dagger, so to speak.
Right, and they really needed to just go ahead and just wrap it up, and they were able to. And 14 plays in a defense and very very. On being on the field on which was a hot night. I mean, it's a hot building, and that's kind of what you see the second week of the season. Guys hadn't played in a lot of game snaps, but I think at that point the Cowboys were able, although they were conservative up to there when they really needed to, I guess, put the foot on the gas, were able to put it away. I felt like with that drive.
Do you have a problem then with an offense getting conservative? Because you've been in situations like that where you said the defense is hot. You know, you feel like it's your night. You can do no wrong. You can pin your ears back, so to speak, at different times. Do you feel that way? Is it possible that maybe, DeMarcus Lawrence, Taco Charlton, whoever say, it's okay, we got this. We're the ones pitching this perfect game. We want to finish it. Is that ever kind of a thing?
I think so, especially when you're able to, when you know they're going to have to throw the football. I mean, who doesn't like to rush the passer? Mm-hmm. Who doesn't like to pin your ears back and try to sack the quarterback? And that's what the Giants had to do. They were in a lot of third and long situations. And but I really felt like they probably felt confident that their offense could sustain a drive. Now, if you're only out there for five or six plays, that's fine. But the Giants could never sustain a drive, so they never were out there. So it really doesn't matter. And I think going to the course of the game, you get this confidence level in your RJ that that it doesn't matter where you're at. The guys that we're matched up against, we're going to whip their ass all day long. And that was able what they did every position, and that's what I like to watch. Even the linebackers, or the defensive back. You hold Odell Beckham to what, five catches, and they're tied. I thought they're tied in. Ingram is a tremendous player, and then Saquon Barkley. When you hold Odell Beckham, which to me is the highest paid player receiver in the National Football League, I don't care who it is, and you stop those big play abilities of him, that's a tremendous effort on their part.
You mentioned the number of plays. First Giants drive, six plays. Second, four plays. Third, three plays. That's three and out. You always want that. The fourth was 11 plays. That was the two fourth down conversions that you mentioned. The fifth possession, eight plays. The sixth possession, first of the second half, four plays. And then finally the 11-play drive that got their first points of the game. But, yeah, I mean, those first three possessions, six plays, four plays, three plays. I mean, that number is shrinking. You don't see that a lot.
That's fun. You don't. And you really, I'm going to be honest with you, as a defense, it's the reality of that happening. Those are goals. I mean, those are goals. You go in, unquote the game. You put these goals up. But you really don't know until you get into the flow of the game. And I thought for the Cowboys, it was such a flow. There's such a rhythm. There's a rhythm in their defense, the play calling, the plays that they, I thought the open field tackling was great. I mean, someone that's very explosive like Barkley, you got to be able to wrap up. I mean, the second guy's got to make the play because the first guy really doesn't is able to get a hit on him. He's just a tremendous – and he's so elusive. But that really showed up to me. But, again, the plays, the number of plays that you're in, as you just mentioned, four plays, six plays, punt, 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 and it just keeps going on. You're like, the more that happens, the duration of the game, just the more confidence you get. And you feel like you can just do anything against them.
It feels like that's just another shot, another round. Let's,
right,
let's all
line
take
them
it
up. Yeah. Let's celebrate.
That's pretty cool. Okay, so I tweeted out that we were going to be recording the 750, and people wanted to know your thoughts on the Cowboys' offensive line. I don't want to say we trashed him. We were definitely critical of Connor Williams after the week one loss in Carolina. We agreed that he was probably the worst Cowboy of the day. I don't think Connor played poorly. I don't think he played like a superstar, but I think the Cowboys offensive line, from my perspective, I do think that Lyle Collins, my one grief is he seems to be getting just a hair of a jump. I mean, just the tiniest little jump, and they're not calling it, but you know, you mentioned it, there's some rust. I don't know if it's because it's early on, but that's my one gripe, and I've noticed he's been doing that ever since the preseason. I don't know what you've seen, though.
I don't know if his natural position is out of tackle. I think he's more of a, if you want my honest opinion, I think he's more of an inside interior guy, but they put him out there because of what Doug Free and some of the, you know, the other
necessity,
retirement. Yeah, they felt like that he could play the guard and the tackle. It may take some time, but I think his natural position is inside, although I think he's done a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. I know we were pretty hard on the offensive line last week because, yes, they gave up a lot of big plays. The quarterback was all in a lot of duress, and honestly, we saw it. I mean, there was a lot of times when Connor Williams was getting, you know, manhandled. I mean, he's a young guy. I think he'll be all right. Looney played well enough. We're never really going to talk about Zach Martin having a game because the guy is just an all-pro. I mean, that's all you need to say about him. But collectively, I thought they did a good job. Again, it's always an issue. The road grader that was playing those Stacks was a Harrison. That's a full-grown man, 350 pounds. And I thought they did a pretty good job. If I'm going to criticize, you know, if we move on the offensive line, I'm going to talk about the receivers because, again, Tavon Austin, they need to be able to get outside on the edges. And Cole Beasley is. It seems to me that your slot receiver has more catches than any other receiver on the league on the team. That may create some problems down the road.
Yeah, you know, on that note, not that I'm looking for an opportunity to criticize, but what was that fade that they threw to Cole? What do you? I mean, I've never played quarterback in the NFL. I don't know if you knew that, Tony. But
I don't know. You look pretty athletic.
I appreciate it. I haven't worked out in about a week, but I would not want Cole Beasley, and I mean this with zero offense to Cole himself, to be the receiver that I was throwing a fade route to in the end zone against a secondary in the New York Giants that's got some playmakers like Janoris Jenkins. I mean, again, logic would tell me if I'm throwing a fade, that better be a pretty big dude because Cole Beasley is not the tallest person.
Well, I'm trying to think. Was he wide open? Because I know there was a fade he threw. I think it was Cole Beasley that – Dak looked like he just got enough pressure where he overthrew him, and he was open.
That was Rico when he threw.
Okay, Rico
gathers.
Okay, so I think, but it was a play. I think it may have been a third quarter. But anyway, there was a couple of times. Well, and that's a great question because most of your fade routes are to more of a the wide out wide receiver,
someone that's out
in the hash that's going to the cone. But again, if you're gonna look at something to be able to, I would say, criticize. There really hasn't been this definitive receiver. You know, Tavon again. He led. Was very explosive. He made yards with receiving the ball and catching it, receiving and running with the ball. But there really isn't any identity. Haven't really identified who's going to be the guy that Dak's going to go to. Now, on the other side of that, I do like this RJ that when he does move around, when he does able to suck guys out of the box and get them on the edge, that's going to open up a lot more opportunities. But I'm going to go back. I really would like to see them establish a tight end. We criticize. Now, Rico Gathers is still on the roster. He got busted for smoking pot or a misdemeanor, and they released Dan Bailey. But what's that tell you about their tight ends? He's probably one of the best tight ends on the roster because they kept him.
Well, I tell you what, they threw it at him twice. The first time Dak was under duress and just kind of gave Rico a shot, went over his head. But I love that, honestly. I'm with you. I don't, it's certainly a curious decision as to why they kept him given that. But it does suggest, like you said, that they really value Rico's size. Do you know that Rico used to play basketball? But apparently nobody knows.
That's why he didn't play football. So people don't understand that. He's a project.
It's kind of like a trope. Like everybody, that's everyone, every broadcast. They're the first thing to tell you is, oh, Rico Gathers never played football before. And it's like, we know.
If he's a basketball player, just throw an alley-oop or something. If he can jump, just throw it up for about 15 feet and have him go for it.
Well, so
there you go.
The second target that he had was in the end zone, and if he had caught that, AT&T Stadium, I don't think we would have gotten out. We'd still be there because it would have just been unreal if Rico Gallegos had caught a touchdown against the New York Giants on Sunday Night Football. That would have been wild.
Well, it's been a year since the tight end has caught a touchdown. That's from we're going to go back to the GOAT. But, again, I think everyone would like to see Rico Gathers, all this to come to some fruition, and him be the guy that they kind of bet on or were hoping that they could develop into a tight end. And maybe time will tell.
Yeah.
But I also think that they got to develop a receiver, a receiving core where they're – able to, you know, with Tavon, they can get some speed on out on the outside, but just take everyone away from the middle of the field and maybe go ahead and check down and not have Cole Beasley always be the check down guy, the safety, you know, the safety blanket.
Right. I'm with you. I definitely want to see them establish sort of a bigger vertical threat that you can feel safe in, you can feel confident in. Hopefully that happens, although it's going to be hard to come by, certainly next week against Earl Thomas. And the rest of the Seahawks secondary. To go back to the offensive line that we were talking about, you know, no sacks given up and no tackles for loss for the Dallas Cowboys. That's a big-time stat. You know, everybody focuses on the sacks, obviously. The Cowboys had 6 sacks, 8 tackles for loss. That's absurd.
That's tremendous.
That is
– how many negative – there's a lot of negative yards. When you go through and you grade the film, you always look at the negative plays, and there's always this – formula of what you know, your goals, and 6 sacks by 6 different players, just causing this havoc the whole day, tackles for loss, all over the place. And we're talking about, again, just the no really any big mental errors. Mm-hmm. Didn't see any breakdowns. I thought it was a very across the board, a very disciplined game by the Cowboys. And usually when you're disciplined, usually you can make big plays and you can create matchups, and especially when you have big time playmakers on the side of the ball. And again, if you can get pressure on the quarterback and create those opportunities, you know, pressure kills a lot of things, especially in the passing game.
So we do something at SB Nation every week called Fan Pulse. That kind of just does that, measures the pulse of fans for all 32 fan bases. And last week, the Cowboys fan base declined the most in confidence of all 32 teams. What's your confidence at? Because we've spent this entire time so far just kind of talking about what we liked and what we didn't like, and thankfully there wasn't a lot that we didn't like, save for kind of the absence of sort of a premier receiving option. I won't even say wide receiver. But where's your confidence? For me, I'd say last week I was maybe a 4 out of 10. And right now I'm kind of maybe a 7 to 7.5 out of 10. I feel optimistic. I feel like to win in the NFL, you have to have something elite. You have to have an ace card. And the Cowboys have like 4 of them on their defense. And so that's going to win. I feel like last night was one of the first times the defense won a game in a long time. And that certainly bodes well moving forward.
Well, my confidence level wasn't too high because I picked the Cowboys not to win this game. Because I didn't really feel maybe I was overreacted on the confidence level because of their offense. I thought their defense was coming on. And maybe I underestimated the defense, that they would be able to make this many negative plays and big plays, and they were able to do that. But I really like my confidence level is a lot higher because they were able to adjust. They were able to look at the film and say, look, you know, we need to get more guys involved. We've seen a picture of game one, what we have. Now, what, you know, sometimes it takes some time to figure that out. I mean, preseason, yes, that's great, but we all know preseason is just, we're just trying to get to the,
right.
Get everybody through the preseason. No one gets hurt, and then we'll get, you know, we'll just see what we'll grow as we get more into the season. So I felt like they took the first game offensively and they said, look, this is what we have to do. We have to look at what maybe North Turner has done with Cam Newton, or what Cam Newton has done. And we don't have it established a number one receiver. We don't know who the go-to guy. We don't want to make we don't want to make Dak this guy that's a drop-back passer the whole time. I mean, we want to make him move around. We want to make him move the defense. And I thought that that's something that they really learned from that, because it is so hard to be able to defend a running quarterback when you have to still play coverage.
Yeah, well, he has to run. Yeah. He has to run to be a running quarterback.
You have to react. Your defense has to move to that. And if you're moving and then you're running the play action, he's dropping back. It just puts a lot of pressure. I like that. So my confidence – now the question is, do I think – this is the second game in the season. Do I think the defense can sustain the rate that they're going now? I think they have a lot of opportunities to show that they can.
Right.
Because they've gotten, you know, the second game of the season, they've been able to, you know, create a lot of negative plays. And I think that they have the personnel. I think if they continue that and get better and better and play with confidence, I don't know if they can bail them out every game. I think their offense – the question is the offense going to be able to score 20 points in a game? Is this going to be an offense that can score, put 28 or 35 points up on a team? I think that's the bigger question.
Well, this game fits. We talked about this last week under Dick LeBeau's 17-point philosophy. You hold an NFL team to 17 points or less, you should win. 13 is obviously, by my math, under 17. you know, I think something that Dak said after the game was really important. He said that they wanted to be the aggressors, that they wanted to be the aggressive ones, and I think that's important. I think you want to be the first to make a move. You mentioned chess earlier. You want to attack, and you don't want to be responding. It felt like everything the Cowboys did in Carolina was reactive, and it felt like a lot of things, maybe not everything, but a lot of things they did against the Giants was proactive. And I think that that's what gave them the upper hand early on. I mean, if the Tavon Austin play hadn't worked, and it was awesome that it did, especially just kind of the – I agree it wasn't beef, but the small little beef with Landon Collins, it was a great sort of opening shot at him. But
absolutely. It kind of put some fire on – put a little gas on the fire.
Right, and I love that right out the gate you just – You take mm-hmm. a shot at the jaw. I love that. I mean, because even if that hadn't worked, to me, I've always thought if I was the Giants and Tavon hadn't caught that, or even it'd been a 12-yard guy, I would have said, okay, wait a minute, this dude's gonna throw deep. We've gotta maybe prepare for this. We can't just load the box against Z because Dak's not afraid to throw, and that wakes everybody up.
It does. It makes you accountable for that. And again, the trash talk, I didn't really interpret that. It's always nice to put a little gas on, you know, the fire and try to start this jawing matchup. And the challenge and everything else, I think everyone needs to respond mm-hmm. and respond to adversity, respond to a challenge. If someone says something about you, then you just go out there. I think your play it's a week-to-week league. It's what have you done for us lately? I mean, it really is. And you're going to get criticized by the media. You're going to get criticized by the fans. So you understand the business. And whatever Landon Collins, he was pretty pedestrian. I didn't really think he made like six tackles during the game. But you're not really scared of Landon Collins. And you're scared of what – not scared, but you're really concerned about what your offense can do as a whole. And, again, I think it was a great game plan to get those guys – move them where they had to respond to running quarterback, and as a result, they were able to open some holes on that defense.
What would you say about Scott Linehan's performance? Obviously, he moved to the booth. That was a big storyline, how he talks to Kellen, and Kellen talks to Dak, and who knows how that game of telephone works. but Scott has been, I think it's obvious, the most chastised, the most discussed, the most debated member of the Dallas Cowboys, coaches, players, front office, everybody. People were really sick of Scott Linehan after the first week in Carolina, and I'd say he responded, but I'd say that he responded to his own response by getting conservative again. So, while we discussed confidence a second ago, what are just your thoughts right now after the first win of the season on the Cowboys offensive coordinator?
I thought Scott learned a lot from the first game. I thought that the assumption that they were going to be able to run the football against a team like Carolina and really not have plan B, the adjustment. I think maybe, sometimes coordinators, they kind of talk themselves out of their old ways and what they like to go to and the creativity that so-called or the adjustments. And it's easy to get into that type of fall into that trap, especially when you have a great running back and this offensive line, just keep feeding it and feeding it to Zeke. The thing that I really, Zeke what he got, what had five receptions. I think it's good to kind of spread him out and move him around and really just kind of feature those type of things, because they really, again, we have, until they really identify, and maybe they won't do this. Maybe they won't find a number one receiver or the tight end. But until they do that, they have to be, they need to find, be explosive in different ways, whether, again, moving him around or whatever it was, you know, using Tavon Moore as a decoy, whatever it may be. I think his progression from game one to this, I thought he did exactly what a good offensive coordinator should do. I mean, maybe, you know, against Seattle, he'll see something on film, or maybe he can go back and, you know, the adjustment part of a coordinator, part of it you don't understand. We may not understand but when you play a good defense, especially going to the game, I think right away you got to establish something that they haven't seen on film, and really just kind of make them think,
like the Tavon Austin play,
right, and just kind of make them, you know, well, we didn't see that look or something we didn't see, and make them have all of a sudden start their wheels to start spinning. And then the defensive coordinator is like, well, I didn't see that. Because all these coordinators prepare for everything. They've seen it. They've done it. And the preparation, unless you get someone that's not prepared, you try to establish those type of opportunities.
I want to be that guy, the guy that's, hey, RJ, we need something really weird that nobody's ever seen before just for the first play of the game. Just come up with the weirdest, stupidest looking thing so we can freak everybody out.
The headphone look on now. Yeah. You got the offensive coordinator look.
Yeah. You know, I don't know what this means, but Zeke had 78 yards last night against the Giants. That's his lowest yardage output in a win as a member of the Cowboys. I don't know what that means exactly. I just know it's true. To me, it says maybe the Cowboys are going to win a little differently. You know, maybe not as sexy in the way, but it is worth noting that Zeke said after the game that it felt a lot like his rookie year, especially that last touchdown drive. That, to me, felt like, for the first time since they played the Chiefs last year on November 5th when Romo came home, that was the first time that it wasn't even, you know, we want to score. It was a foregone conclusion. They decided. They said, we're going to score on this drive. We're going to play our kind of football. And they did, and that was the first time I felt like they really flexed that muscle in a long time.
I think with Zeke, maybe there's a lot to be said for that because he's probably a guy that maybe it takes him a little longer to get started up. If you go and look at his rookie year, and last year, he missed a lot of the season. Just to kind of understand the nuances of just a new season and kind of feel his way out. But I really think it's going to be different this year, RJ, because a lot of teams are going to – their first – and that's every defense is to stop the run. We're going to stop the run, and we're not until we see other. We're going to make sure that, you know, we don't get beat by number 21, and that's going to be the whole narrative every year, because he is the best player on offense.
That makes
hands
sense.
Down, and that's what you're going to do. And I guess it's going to be, you know, what is the coordinator Scott Linehan going to do to change that, because you don't, and also to use Dak as a runner. That's probably going to be, we're going to see a lot of that, to kind of loosen things up until you're able to really just kind of loosen up the edge, until you're able to find someone that's a threat that's going to get you 10 or 12 yards in a passing game. Someone else is going to show you the big play. I think that's what we're going to see for the remainder until their offense shows up, until they show that they have an explosive offense, that they show that during the course of the season they're going to be able to put up 28, 35 points on the scoreboard.
That makes sense, and it's very logical. This has been a great discussion about the first one of the season. We'll be back later this week to talk about the upcoming Seahawks game and any news that happens between now and then. Something that might become official between now and then, there's been all this discussion all weekend long and all Monday long about Bryce Butler and looking like a return to the Cowboys. Just our final thoughts on this episode about this. I just find it, if you had told me that the Cowboys are going to move on from both Bryce Butler and Dez Bryant in the same offseason, and that Josh Gordon was going to be available, and that the Cowboys would bring in Bryce Butler of all of them, I would have been stunned. For one, I love Bryce's game. He's a huge and fast athlete. I don't know that he's the same physical guy that Dez is, but Dak certainly has some longstanding history with him and some chemistry with him that I think is pertinent, but I don't know what to call it other than it's weird. And what would it feel like to you? We talked about this last week with Dez and Beyonce, but to have, you know, I don't know that Bryce scorched the Cowboys the way Dez did, but Bryce said some things. So this is just, I mean, do you think this is weird too? Because I think this is weird.
I think the bottom line is you get a guy, you get him relatively cheap, you get him to come back in there, he has some familiarity with this offense. He caught some balls while he's here. And he's just another opportunity. The question is, Terrence Williams, what's his role going to be? Because we haven't really heard much from him. He had one catch against the Giants, I believe. So there's not really any clear-cut guy that's really just blown up. I mean, Allen Hurns, I thought that he would come in here and just kind of light it up, you know, what he did in Jacksonville. Michael Gallup, I mean, he had a couple of catches last night. But if I'm the Cowboys, I'm still searching. Mm-hmm. The biggest question I thought about this today, RJ, would have been a great question. Who would you have thought that would play in a National Football League this season, Josh Gordon or Dez Bryant? And right now, Josh Gordon was traded officially to the New England Patriots for a fifth-round draft pick.
Yeah, to your
Dez
point.
Dez still doesn't have a job.
To your point, Josh Gordon has gotten two chances, you know, technically, because he got one with the Browns.
Two chances. He's got nine lives.
Well,
ten lives.
I mean, yeah, you know.
I know.
But that is – and Dan Bailey is now a Minnesota Viking. Personally, I hope Dan Bailey just makes nothing but game-winning kicks in the final seconds against the Packers for the next 15 years. That's all. I hope he does that for us, you know, because that would bring me a lot of joy.
That was brutal to watch, though, yesterday. I mean, there was a lot of guys. Is that an epidemic now in the National Football League that this year, in the second week of the season, or even the college football season, these kickers, they can't find the uprights?
It's, I mean, you know, a week ago we were certainly down on Brett Maher. He certainly was 100% accurate on Sunday night for the Cowboys. But, yeah, I mean, Tony, there have been two ties in 2 weeks. What?
That's unheard of.
Yeah, I don't like
that. We're
all
complaining about the sudden death, the way they used to have the overtime. I'm thinking maybe they need to go back to the old way they played overtime.
Yeah. I for one, love the old
way. I don't want to see a tie.
No, it's gross. The tie is gross. But yeah, definitely weird that Josh Gordon has gotten this many chances. Now, thankfully, the Cowboys don't have to play the New England Patriots this season. But I think this does help, if I'm being honest, because they play the Detroit Lions this week when we play the Seahawks, and then the Cowboys get the Lions. And so the Lions already are 0-2. They're feeling down. They're going to get roundhoused by the Patriots because Bill Belichick knows everything about Matt Patricia. So we're going to get a Lions team with their tail tucked between their legs, headed to AT&T Stadium, 0-3. And I think, you know, the Hot Boys, they're going to smell blood in that water, and they're just going to attack all day long.
Well, if you see their schedule, you know, they play the Seahawks, and they're back home against the Lions. Mm-hmm. So you got two NFC – you've had, would have had four NFC teams after the Detroit Lions. So if you get some help from some of the other teams, especially in the NFC East, that bodes well for you.
Well, and then you get to go face that crappy offensive line in Houston. So things are – you know, we talk confidence. I'm feeling this could be a good early beginning of our fall. You know,
I hate to do this to you, though, RJ, that the overstated cliche, one game at a time, big boy.
That's right, one game at a time. We'll be back later this week to talk about the next game, Cowboys-Seahawks. Cowboys have had some success in Seattle recently. You know, that's a team, just an eerie connection to the Cowboys, and specifically Tony Romo, obviously the playoff loss, the big-time win in 2014, the preseason game that effectively ended his career. So it'll be fun. And, you know, we'll talk about everything. We'll take your questions. Blogging the Boys audience, certainly hit me up on Twitter. I'm at RJ Ochoa. Tony is at TC Casillas. There's a C right in between the T and Casillas. And Tony's going to get going on bloggingtheboys.com soon this week. It's a good time. It's victory week. It's hard to be upset this week, Tony.
Everybody's happy when the Cowboys win. So all our opinions will be happy. Maybe. But yeah, I'm looking forward to writing a little blog on the website. I'm looking forward to that. Good. And also looking for all the comments and, you know, our listeners and people that come to the site. I'm more than happy to answer all the comments, and yourself and myself answer all the comments and questions.
For sure. This was, it's not often that you get to integrate tequila and Fireball into a conversation about the Cowboys.
What an analogy, right?
It was fantastic. So, another episode of the 750. Tony, I'll see you later this week, my friend.
All right, brother.
Already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the sun? Just remember when you come up. The show goes on.
Hey everybody, it's Neil Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge. I host a podcast every week called The Vergecast with my friends Paul Miller and Dieter Bone. We've got a rotating cast of characters from our entire site, which is about technology, how it impacts culture, and how that is all a big cycle that causes us to have a wide variety of feelings that you can listen to every Friday. We've done over 300 episodes in the 6 years since The Verge has been around, but you only need to listen to one, the latest one, to get caught up on everything in tech news. Vergecast is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere else you listen to podcasts. Check it out.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.